Inflation's at a 40-year high, the market's feeling shaky, and we're just coming out of one of the biggest health scares of our lifetime. But let me share some good news. I'm Chris Herrlein, wealth manager and host of Wealth Radio on News Radio KLBJ. The successful families we work with at REAP Financial are still able to set their retirement dates with a high degree of confidence that they'll succeed. Want to know why they're so confident? Get your hands on our retirement planning checklist now. Just drop me an email, chris@wealthradio.com, and put checklist in the subject line. That's chris@wealthradio.com.
The Todd and Oz Show is live. Get in on the conversation at 512-836-0590. Now, here are Todd and Oz.
It was a whistleblower that brought our attention to the Northbridge Shelter here in Austin, along with a city council member here in town in District 6, Mackenzie Kelly. And now, there's some real anger about the Northbridge Shelter and, how it's just kind of just falling apart, basically. It's one of those hotels that you purchase to house the homeless. And a whistleblower's photos and videos prompts a call for an investigation into this homeless shelter. Well, see, the city took a housing first approach on this one. And in other words, they took a housing first approach. So these people are doing drugs and prostitution. There's gangs, but violence inside the Northbridge Shelter.
A lot of it.
Adrian Gibson is a city employee hired in April of 2022 as a program supervisor for the Austin Public Health Department. And she was placed on administrative leave July the 31st, because, well, she was complaining about the state of the shelter. A frustrated Gibson told the Statesman, she told Mackenzie Kelly, she told us here at News Radio KLBJ, and, well, we've seen the photos ourselves, and it doesn't look good.
No. I mean, got them right here in front of me. And I mean, got a gun on a windowsill, got a bunch of little drug baggies and used pipes and tin foil that's all dark and singed with lighters. And the reports are nasty. Machetes and knives and hammers and assaults in the hallways and prostitution and meth manufacturing overdoses. I mean, these are the allegations coming out of the city-run Northbridge Shelter. And you own it. You own that.
Did the city think it was going to be different when they went out and rounded up a bunch of drug addicts, alcoholics, and mentally ill types? Did they think that they were all of a sudden going to be the kind of people that get up at 6 a.m., take a shower, and go look for a job? Did they think that's what they were going to get?
That's the picture that was painted by, groups like the Austin Justice Coalition with their rhetoric about criminalizing homelessness. And, eventually, so they're all just people that want an opportunity. Given the opportunity, they'll take it.
Think about it, though. It was this whistleblower brought it to the city's attention, her boss. Yeah. And they put her on leave because she brings a problem to them.
Clearly, the city is not interested in fixing this issue.
How dare you take those photos? How dare you go to the local radio station?
Basically, that whole Northbridge, it's just they were all swept under the rug. That's the rug. They're under that roof now.
RuPaul Chaudhary is weighing in. She owns the motel that's next to the old Scandalwood Suites, mm-hmm. known as Pecan Groves.
Mm.
RuPaul, I would think that you're probably concerned that that hotel next to yours may turn into something like the Northbridge Shelter.
Good morning, everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had several conversations. We've spoken out loud. We've had several protests. We've tried to have meetings with the city officials, saying, hey, failed homeless policies fuel crime. And we've said this over and over again. I would say this is year three of us repeating the same thing. And I firmly believe, action without a vision is going to end up like a nightmare, what we are seeing today. And this is where the thought process has to put in. What problem are we trying to solve? Is it the housing problem? Is it the mental illness, substance abuse problem? And if that's the problem, how are we addressing it?
Not to mention the homeless strategies are Diane Gray quit this week. She yep. resigned and she's gone. And one thing that stood out to me in the story in the Statesman was there is no homeless strategy plan. There is no plan.
Yeah, well, just throw money at it. That seems to be the strategy that's always been here.
Yeah.
And till the community is not a part of this conversation, you're not going to solve this. Cities can't solve this problem because, again, the understanding is not there what the problem is and what you're addressing and how you're solving it. So,
yeah,
this is exactly. And I'm not worried about Candlewood because I know that's exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. Last year, city-owned Candlewood was completely vandalized, was broken into, And now they're pushing the contract away because the damage is so extensive. So,
Rubel, let me ask you a question
that we have not seen before.
I know that there are proposals. I know that Mackenzie Kelly is working on finalizing that police substation there on the Candlewood or Pecan Gardens property. Does that give you at least a modicum of peace of mind that you know at least there's going to be a substation there?
I really hope that works out because, you know, it's one thing. West City is not conversing to say, okay, is this really happening? And I definitely commend Mackenzie Kelly for at least thinking on putting a substation there. And I really hope, but we know how the staffing prices are in Austin City right now with the police.
Yeah.
So how this is going to happen, I mean, I'm really wanting to see all of this play out. And I'm not fear-mongering by any means, but no. We are seeing everything right in front of our eyes right now. And, you know, we are just hopeful that city actually comes through with what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, whatever that strategy plan is, right?
Absolutely. And I think we have to be a part of that engagement. We have to be a part of the communication. What city is pushing their own agenda down our throats is so wrong at so many different levels, hurting the businesses, and they are hurting the same minority business class,
the city is never going to listen to your thoughts and opinions on this issue. The people of Austin voted to enforce Proposition B, and the city's not enforcing it. So they're not going to listen to voters. They're not going to listen to anybody on this issue. There's too much.
Then those progressive zealots are getting what they are voting for. And, this is exactly, I would say, progressive zealots on the city council, I mean, exactly are earning it every day.
Yeah, good point. Here's what Mackenzie Kelly says in her conversation with the Austin American Statesman on their website. She says, it's come to my attention there have been several deaths in the Northbridge shelter linked to overdoses.
Yep.
We heard from the medical examiner about 5 xylene deaths recently. Mm-hmm. We don't know if they were in the Northbridge shelter, but some people have died in there. Mackenzie Kelly, in her email, she says, additionally, that she has been informed that drugs are being sold and consumed and manufactured by clients inside the building, along reports of prostitution. Disturbingly, there have been allegations of clients assaulting each other, even the presence of weapons such as machetes, knives, and hammers. A photo of a gun found in one client's room and with a bunch of drugs on the premises. Moreover, she says that she has heard concerns that methamphetamines may be produced within the facility by the clients. Mm-hmm. These issues, if accurate, are not only alarming, but deeply troubling. It's heartbreaking, Kelly says, in her interview with the Austin American Statesman.
Well, and think about just that one aspect of these allegations here, the methamphetamine manufacturing. Think about how dangerous it is to make that drug. You're an armchair chemist, and you're going to blow up this whole building if you're not careful. How is this? And how do we not have more people working there that are coming out and pointing these issues out? It would be impossible, if these allegations are all true, for anyone to work there and not know what's going on. Then one person, that's all we've heard from.
Here's what the city manager tells the Statesman. We've given instructions to the appropriate staff to go in there and make sure those kinds of things, at least that are being depicted in those photos, to get it out and make sure it's not happening.
They need to move on this quick.
It may be too late.
Well, I mean, something's got to be done because we pay for this. They took our money. They bought this. They promised it was going to be this wonderful bridge between camps and permanent supportive housing. And all they did was take the camps, put a cap on it, and air condition it. That's it.
Well, the last city audit on spending on the homelessness, published in September of 2021, stated that there was no complete inventory of agreements and associated spending with the city of Austin's homeless assistance efforts. In other words, they don't know where all the money goes. They've lost track of it.
Of course they don't.
Well, the city of Austin has spent hundreds of millions of dollars over the last few years to address this crisis. 2 weeks prior to Gray's resignation, the homeless czar, she resigned, Tuesday, I think it was? Just last week, the city council approved spending another $81 million to respond to the homeless crisis.
Well, it is indeed a crisis. It's only getting worse.
We got an alcohol and drug and mental health crisis. That's what we got.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, being homeless is a symptom of those problems. And what we have here with the Northbridge shelter is housing first, and then we'll deal with their problems later.
So imagine you give every person a home, some place to live, a roof over their head, but you don't treat any of their underlying problems that got them out on the street. You're going to find this in individual homes all over the city where people get their housing.
How many people live at the Northbridge Shelter? I don't know if we know the exact number or how many people can live there, how many spaces they have. It looks like a pretty big place, maybe a couple of hundred people.
I want to say it's a couple of hundred, but I could be off, but I feel like it's in the couple hundreds.
What is the city going to do if that place burns down from that meth lab?
9:17 here on the Todd and Oz Show. Listen, the Austin City Council votes in favor of crafting new requirements for all homes. Councilmember Vanessa Fuentes, and I hope you're paying attention, everybody out there, because this is a big deal. This affects you. Councilwoman Vanessa Fuentes is behind this change to the land code that will require air conditioning systems to be installed and maintained in every dwelling across the city. She spoke with CBS Austin.
Individuals who are already living in vulnerable communities, marginalized communities, they're experiencing dangerous conditions.
Yeah, this would apply to homes, apartments, townhomes, and more. The change will actually be in place by next summer. Are there apartment complexes that don't have AC?
See, I can't imagine that there are any places that are being built modern that don't.
Well, if there is, we need to fix that.
I mean, I went to college, up in the Northwest, and up there, it was not uncommon to find places that didn't have AC. But I've never been in anywhere that's modern that doesn't. And I'm looking through this council resolution here, written up by Fuentes. When I first heard this, I thought, okay, well, if you're renting your property out. Right. Maybe that's what they're saying. If you can rent your property out. It makes no mention of that in this. The ordinance makes no mention. It says all property owners, period.
So even if I own my own home and I don't want an air conditioning system, she's going to come crack down on me? Mm-hmm. I know that seems odd to not have AC in Texas, but is that what she's saying?
I mean,
it sounds like the first step towards affecting homeowners.
Private property rights. Here it is, right? The verbatim. The city council initiates amendments, Title 25, land development, to require a residential property owner to provide and maintain refrigerated equipment capable of maintaining each habitable room with a temperature comfortable and less than the outside temperatures.
Kind of vague, it sounds like.
And it makes no mention, though, of, you're required to do this only if you're going to rent your property out. It sounds like even if you're just a regular old property owner who's just going to live there the rest of your life, we, the city, demand that you spend money and then spend money to maintain it, too, assuming you don't already have it.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, first off, I find it odd that there's anybody living with no air conditioning. There's probably some rundown apartments somewhere that's, got a couple of units that are not blowing cold air right now. Takes a little time to get them repaired, right?
Or maybe some of those old homes that are still around Austin, built in the 30s, 40s, stuff like that, that we could see that maybe. But I can't imagine the majority of...
Is it a big problem? I mean, I don't want anybody living with no air conditioning. Is it a big problem, though? Is she solving a big crisis here?
So she, in this, she points to a couple of pieces of data. She says that paramedics have responded to, this is as of July, paramedics have responded to 176 heat-related calls at the time of the writing of this. In June, they 234 heat-related calls. 279 people died due to heat all of last year in Texas. 137 were resident deaths, she says, many of whom were Texans experiencing homelessness and were people without air conditioning. And then she talks about climate change and humidity. But
you know who the biggest violators of this new ordinance are going to be? The biggest violators will be the city of Austin. The city of Austin will have homeless shelters that will not have air conditioning. The city will be the biggest violators on this issue when it comes to air conditioning, just like the city is the biggest water waster in town.
With their pools.
Cracking down on you, but when they're the biggest problem in town.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like...
And here's the thing. This city council believes those tents that people live in the woods, that's their home.
Well, I mean,
Is city going to force them, make sure they got air in those places? City going to put them out?
So we're going to have to go buy them a bunch of those little portable ACs. To me, this just sounds like another solution in search of a problem. I mean, it doesn't. She says that there are a lot of people, especially over on the east side of town, that still don't have AC, and maybe that's true. So this will mandate that they get it. But what if it's a situation where you're a homeowner and you can't afford to buy a new AC system, much less maintain it, as it mentions in the ordinance?
Yeah.
What are they going to do then?
Interesting. Jump in here at 512-836-0590. I think this story about the Northbridge shelter that we broke earlier this week of how it's being used to to manufacture and sell drugs, a lot of prostitution and violence and stuff like that inside the Northbridge homeless shelter that you're paying for.
Yeah, it's like Caligula there.
I know this is a real eyesore. This is a real problem for the city council. This is a real problem for city staff. This is a black eye in the reputation of the mayor. I bet he's hot over this one. And you're probably not going to hear much more about it, about the story. Because I bet a lot of people are going to be afraid to even talk about it.
I think given the scope of these allegations, I think it would behoove city officials to get out in front of this and try to address it publicly.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. The mayor should have a press conference at noon and explain and apologize and talk about his plan to fix it.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead, he's going to let it percolate for a few days and a few weeks and become even more of a problem.
Well, it'll become more of a problem there, but it will die out of discussion very, very quickly. And so, you know, Kirk Watson has been in politics for a long time. He knows how to weather storms, and this is, you know, probably not the biggest speed bump he's ever been up against. So he knows you just don't say anything, keep your mouth shut for a few days, and they'll
avoid eye contact, and it'll blow over.
They'll find something else to talk about, and then we won't have to address it anymore.
There'll be another problem to deal with. Yeah.
But eventually, like you pointed out, as they're allegedly cooking meth in there, blows a place up. You got multiple people that are, you know, injured or worse.
People are dying inside there.
I mean, that is the claim, that there have been at least one overdose death in there. I thought they told us there was going to be security on site at all times and that they were, you know, going to vet people coming in and out.
Doesn't sound like it's happening.
No, it sounds like they basically just said, hey, guys, come out of the camp, come in here, see ya, bye. That's pretty much it.
And the other thing is this whistleblower, I can't think of her name right now. Gibson, I think her name was. She's the one that blew the whistle. City employee. She was hired to work there, and she's the one that blew the whistle on all of this. And she's been silenced by the city.
Well, again, not surprised that. The city clearly is trying to sweep this under the rug. And if she tried to bring this to light and then was fired for it, that says a whole lot about how willing the city is to address its own shortcomings here.
Let me back up. I don't think she's been fired. I think she's just been placed on leave.
Oh, okay, that's pardon me. Thing. Pardon me. Placed on leave. Okay. Yeah, either way, right. Either way, to me, this is something that if you are working there and you see this and you bring this to the attention of the people, you know, your supervisors or whomever, that should be praised. You should be held up to a higher standard, saying, you know what? Look, everybody else, this is what we need to do. We need accountability. We need to keep this place running and everybody here safe.
John is on I-35 this morning. Hey, John. Hello. John, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Y'all remember that show, Welcome Back, Cotter, with Horshack, was always raising his hand going, oh, call right. me.
Yeah.
That's what's happening at these meetings. They sit around the table, raise their hand, and go, let's say everybody's got to have air conditioning. They can't even keep the air on in the fire trucks with guys with 40 pounds of gear on.
It's true.
You need to tell me they're going to come out and check air conditioners?
It's true. Like I said, the city will be the biggest violator of this new ordinance.
Well, they typically tend to be.
Yeah. It's true. John, I didn't think about that. Well, the city can't even keep fire trucks air conditioned.
Fire trucks? Trash
trucks?
Absolutely. Trash trucks?
Just had an idea at a table. Raise their hand and, oh, you're next.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you, John. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times the stuff that Fuentes is pushing through up there, to me, it's just it's kind of like, I'm here and I'm doing something. Everybody pat me on the back because look how wonderful I am. I'm taking care of you.
Well,
nothing gets done.
That's the story of the progressive left. Not everybody on the left, but the progressive left for sure.
This modern wing of it, yeah.
Throw a policy out there that it feels right.
That's really all.
You know
it is.
What? Everybody in this heat should be able to get inside air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Sure.
Everybody should be able to get into air conditioning, right?
And how do you argue against that, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we all agree. Yeah, that feels right. Yeah, yeah, let's do that. See, that's the problem, Vanessa, is you're too busy judging policies and programs based on how they feel and not actually how the results and if it works.
Well,
and right now, your Northbridge shelter thing, it might feel good to put all those prostitutes and dope dealers and drug heads in one location. But it's proven to be a bad idea, isn't it?
Well, and you know, an interesting side note with that, you know, from what I've done a little digging in the Southbridge shelter, I don't believe is having these same problems. It's not actually being directly run by the city, but rather they contracted out to a third party, whereas the city actually directly, I believe, runs Northbridge. And there you find the difference. You know, yet again, the city is, that whole government tarnish brass thing.
Well, like you've always said, at the very best, government is mediocre.
Oh, my God, yes.
At the very best.
Truer words may never have been spoken.
931 here on the Todd and Oz Show. Jump in here at 512-836-0590. Yeah, here on the Todd and Oz Show. Check this out. This is a report from John R. Lott Jr., the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. And it shows that between 2014 and 2022, armed citizens stopped active shooters 8 times more often than what the FBI has claimed.
Wow, all right.
Yeah, and this report excerpts, which Lott published at Real Clear Politics, noted that out of 440 active shooter incidents between 2014 and 2022, an armed citizen stopped 157. And we also found the FBI had misidentified 5 cases, usually because the person who stopped the attack was incorrectly identified as a security guard.
Okay, instead of a regular fella, they thought he was actually employed.
Well, anyway, he observed that while the FBI claims that 4.6% of active shootings were stopped by law-abiding citizens carrying a gun, that percentage was actually found to be closer to about 35%.
Nope.
Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Interesting. That seems pretty high. I didn't think it'd be that high.
Yeah.
Wow. It goes on to say, I'm more confident that I have identified a higher share of recent cases, and our figure of 2022 was even higher at 41%.
Wow, that's big. That's a lot of people defending their lives, their family's lives, their homestead against bad guys. Interestingly enough, though, I guess it's not sexy enough when a good guy saves the day anymore, so the media doesn't seem to want to pick up on this stuff.
Doesn't make the headlines.
Yeah, things like that don't fit the narrative that guns actually save lives.
Well, despite Lott's findings and the findings by the CPRC, the FBI's data has not been adjusted. Lott highlighted this by pointing it to an email that he received in 2015 in which the FBI admitted the Lott had uncovered an example that they had missed of an armed citizen stopping an active shooter. Well, despite that admission, the FBI database never added the incident, never made the correction.
I mean, do you think there's something bigger behind that? The FBI wouldn't want to classify these things properly? Is it they're trying to cook the books a little bit, so to speak? Yeah. I mean, it seems to me like this is good news that you want to share. You know, we hear constantly the story every day about this guy pulled a gun and he shot somebody and we need more gun control laws. But
well, it doesn't forget the left's political narrative. Maybe that's the reason.
Could be. I mean,
and you're going on the premise that the FBI's 100% honest all the time.
Oh, no. I would never be so nice.
There's good men and women in the Bureau. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. They do some good things. But there are some rogue ones in there occasionally.
There's some rogue agents. There's a lot of really good agents. I think the problem is more, up in the management office.
Well, here's what Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center. He concludes the FBI data on active shootings is missing so many defensive gun uses that it's hard to believe that it isn't intentional. Mistakes can happen, but a failure to fix past reports shows a troubling disregard for the truth. You would think that a law enforcement agency would really put the truth up front and center.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? He goes on to say the reality is that armed, law-abiding citizens are unsung guardian angels.
Damn right they are. In fact, sometimes, I'm having a bad day, so I'll pop on YouTube and I'll just, travel on down the rabbit hole and just watch video after video after video of armed civilian defending his family or, her business. And it's beautiful. But I wonder sometimes when I'm watching, I'm like, why haven't we heard about all these things? Some of them look like just a video from last year, and maybe they make the news locally, but these are big numbers. And so you got to look at that and go, well, why don't we want to talk about this more? I mean, guns are the vast majority of legal gun owners are not the ones that are out there committing these crimes. And in fact, you should be holding these. I don't know. Obviously, this is not a sexy thing for the media to talk about. So, you don't hear about that stuff most places, but you do hear about it here.
Well, it's hard to, it's hard to chase the story when the FBI is given the wrong data.
True.
Right.
But obviously, there is data out there to be found.
Yeah.
I mean, as we're looking here, able to compile some of this stuff showing, 35% more than what the FBI was claiming. And then last year it was 41% more than what the FBI was claiming. I said, the data's clearly there somewhere.
Yeah. Listen, the collective bargaining negotiations between nurses, part of the National Nurses United and Ascension Seton Medical Center here in Austin, to address the hospital's staffing issues. And it came to an abrupt ending yesterday in their conversations yesterday afternoon. Yeah, the move was made after a group of Ascension nurses abruptly walked in to hand the director of the intensive care unit and the director of MedSurg for Ascension Seton their proposal for more safe staffing.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever that, I mean, do they want 100, they want 50, want 70? What do they need? What do they want more people?
Well, so how many? Based on what I read in this KVU article here, they talked to a couple of the nurses that were out there, and one of them was saying that it's not uncommon for nurses to have, as many as 6 patients, which, to the outside looking in, somebody like me, it doesn't sound like a lot, but apparently it is a big burden for nurses. And so, they'll say, well, not only do we not have enough nurses, but we don't have enough, assistance to help the nurses out. And they say it comes down to impacting patient care is the argument.
Well, since the nurses have not received any solution from the hospital management to fix what they describe as unsafe working conditions, the nurses said they could be taking action soon. There could be another strike in the making. They haven't picked a date, but it sounds like that's in the making.
Do you think their first strike that they went on was effective? I mean, no. They went out, it was a lot of fanfare around this, right? We're going on strike. This is an historic nurses' strike. They even called it that.
Yeah.
And it was. So here we are months later. You're still talking about it. The same problems. Now you're going to go on strike again. But the problem that I see with this strike is when they walk out, other nurses come in to take their place, and really nobody's the wiser that you're standing out there on the sidewalk with placards.
In the world of TikTok, one of the spokesperson for the National Union for the National Nurses United, well, he was saying there's not a nurses shortage.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of hiring them.
Yeah.
He talks about the number of nurses, thousands across the country. And maybe they're not able to hire them because they can't pay as much as the traveling nurses.
I mean, I could understand. We had a guy call in earlier that sort of said, there are a lot of seasoned professional nurses that are become traveling nurses, and sort of the assumption that maybe you got a lot of younger nurses coming out of school and they immediately want to make that money, and that causes some sort of jealousy rift,
right?
Maybe. The truth of the matter is, you've got to have these traveling nurses. And until we figure out a fix to this whole thing, apparently we're going to continue to have nursing shortages across the state and the nation.
Well, it sounds like the only way to fix this is to pay the Ascension Seton nurses the same as the traveling nurses.
Well, you got to give the traveling nurses a little bit extra. They're traveling.
I get that. I understand why they make more, but it sounds like that's the only solution the nurses are looking for at Ascension. Pay us as much as you pay them, and we'll be happy.
Well, so then is it about money or is it about actual staffing?
It's always about money.
Okay.
It's always about money.
Well, that's what I always assume when unions strike.
Because the patients are not less safe when the traveling nurses are there.
Not at all. Not at all. And that's why I feel like the impact of the strike is blunted, or was the first time. But I know the National Nurses United, they blame the industry for a staffing crisis, which they call manufactured. So technically, now we have enough nurses, but the hospital industry is creating this, so we can't staff enough of them. So it's all their fault. I've only really heard the arguments about staffing, but I always have to assume when people strike, money is certainly a factor in their discussion.
Well, I always like to dig a little bit deeper, because if it's just a matter of patient to nurse ratio, that seems like that's an easy fix.
Should be. Should be easy enough, I would think.
I mean, and the hospital's not even responding. I mean, is the hospital saying, well, we'd love to hire some people, but nobody's applying for the job, so we can't? Why would the hospital want fewer nurses? Why would the hospital want to put patients in danger? It makes no sense, because if it's a matter of just hiring people, they'll pass the cost on.
Of course they will.
Right?
Yeah. It makes as much sense to me as it does, say, a contractor refusing to let his workers drink water out on the job site, and then they get sick and die, and then they can't get the job done. It makes no business sense from the perspective of a hospital to not have enough staff in there or to want there to not be enough nurses. I can't imagine this is an active desire from the hospital, but they weren't happy with the nurses storming in there. That's why they cut off talks yesterday.
Yeah.
They said it was very disrespectful and a violation of decorum.
Kristen, I think her name's Kristen Kettleson. She's a registered nurse here in Austin. And this is when the previous strike.
Great historic strike yesterday. Good turnout. We're back here at work this morning, ready to return to work and take care of our patients.
There you go. Yeah. So anyway, there's talk of a possibly another strike. Dave is in Liberty Hill. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
Great. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me all right?
Loud and clear. Go right ahead, sir. Hello. Yeah, we're here, Dave. Go right ahead.
Hey, how are you? Sorry about that.
Sure, go ahead.
So my comment that I was thinking, my wife has been an ER nurse, trauma nurse, flight nurse for over 30 years. And, you know, it's very easy to paint the whole thing in one big brush, whether it's the position of management or whether it's the position of the nurse. And that's not fair on anybody's behalf. But the point that I was thinking about that I've heard her talk about for decades is when their patient to ratio or to nurse ratio gets too heavily burdened, and it's not black and white because it depends on the level of care that that particular patient needs. It's her license that's on the line. Yeah. There's civil liability on the part of the doctor and the hospital and so on, and even the nurse. But if something gets overlooked because they're stretched too thin, her license can get pulled. It
sure.
loses her career.
Sure.
And, you know, and it's, so I'm very much in support of the staff, but it's not a big brush that you can paint the whole thing in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there are nurses that need to be willing to do, you know, to step up and take a higher level of care with their patients. You know, I'm not saying every nurse is perfect and every management is evil.
Yeah.
But that license for my wife in having to protect that for the last 34 years has sometimes been a battle.
Yeah. Interesting. I hadn't thought about that, Dave. Thanks for checking in this morning. A couple of months ago, the nurses at Ascension Seton here in town, they went on strike. They need more co-workers. They say the nurse-to-patient ratio is not where it should be. Mm-hmm. They feel as if they individually have too many patients on hand to take care of, and, well, they're concerned about patient care is what they say. And apparently contract negotiations kind of broke down yesterday as they had some new demands on how to hire more people. Here's one of those nurses at Ascension Seton here in Austin.
Give me a break. And you tout yourself as a nonprofit hospital? No way. No way. What other industry is allowed to do that? Let's call it. I'm calling you out, Ascension. It's not okay. Hi there. My name is Hannah Reeves. I'm a nurse and mother baby. I've worked for Ascension for 15 years. I'm actually a second career nurse. I got into nursing because I love the art and science of patients. I'm out here today because we can't take care of our patients properly. There's not enough of us at the bedside. There's not enough supplies. We don't have the resources we need. We're not treated fairly. You know, having done this for 15 years, and as I age, I want to work bedside, but dang it, I'm tired. We don't get breaks. I can't give the care that I want to give. So I wanted to stand up here in this heat to support us, and even just not my unit, but other units. I heard stories from the other departments of the hospital, and it was atrocious. And these were egregious problems. And putting patients at risk and putting my friends at risk for not just their nursing license, but their physical health, their mental health. It's not okay.
Yeah, there you go. That was just one of the Ascension nurses here in Austin. Jump in at 512-836-0590. Do we have a nursing shortage? Because the National Nursing Union says, no, we don't. We have plenty of nurses registered across the country. Some of them are traveling nurses. I'm just curious. Is it would be the same results. Do we have too few nurses and many, many more patients? Are the patients outnumbering the nurses because of the quality of health we currently live in? Because if that's the case, then none of these problems, this problem is not going to get better as we get sicker and older.
Right. Well, certainly not. But yeah, I mean, I keep hearing the same theme over and over. The patients are at risk. The patients are at risk. And then, you know, you hear them say, well, it's also, you know, we're burning out too. But I don't hear this from people that I know who have gotten care at Ascension Seton.
Now,
maybe that's a testament to the quality and skill of the nurses themselves, that they can, you know, they can do it in a way that we don't realize it. But
I'm
not seeing progress being made here. We were talking about this back in June. They went on their, quote, historic strike in June. And here we are, probably looking at another nurse strike at some point in the very near future.
And the thing that's also troubling, it's as if some of these nurses are just reciting the press release from the National Nurses Organization. I'm wondering if they've been manipulated. You know what I mean? I wonder if the union bosses are using the nurses to get more union dues.
You mean unions manipulating things to their gain? There's no precedent for that.
I don't know.
Are you kidding? Come on.
This is Taylor Curtin Washington, and I'm a nurse at Ascension Seton Medical Center, and I am joined by a large group of RNs that have just gotten off of the picket line during our historic strike. We are asking folks to join the RN movement so we can make a difference for our patients and for the nursing profession as a whole.
Yeah, so there you go. That's just some of the, then they got their fist in the air. There you go. You see how she's reciting the press release verbiage?
It does.
Historic strike?
Does sound a little contrived.
Like some of them may be used as puppets.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I would not be surprised. So we're approaching a full year of contract negotiations here. Sounds like management is not happy with what's being proposed to them, and the nurses clearly are not happy.
I don't think the management at Seton here, or Ascension Seton here in town, wants to put patients in jeopardy. And I don't think management wants nurses to feel like they're not appreciated. That's just hard to believe, that the people that are running that nonprofit hospital want to put patients in jeopardy. I just don't think it's happening.
Well, I've heard some people describe it as, we're just numbers and spreadsheets to hospital management.
Well,
you know, they don't actually understand what it really means to be down here in the trenches.
That's what the system has become. I mean, that's, with insurance companies and things like that, and Medicare, Medicaid, I mean, it's a very complicated thing. There's a lot of paperwork, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly this problem has been building over the years.
Yeah.
And it's now apparently coming to a head.
All right, jump in here at 512-836-0590. I mean, earlier we've talked to, I got a friend that was at Seton, at this very, very hospital downtown. He said the care was outstanding.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but.
Above and beyond.
Yeah, that's all I've ever heard about Ascension.
In other words, he was saying patient care hasn't suffered.
Yeah. And in fact, my dad was in the hospital earlier this year. He wasn't in Ascension, but he was over at St. David's. Similar thing. And I don't know if they've got nursing issue or staffing issues, but we hear about this nationwide nursing shortage. But I didn't see anything personally with my dad at the hospital where he was in either. They got stellar care there. So again, if the nurses are struggling this bad, they're certainly not. I've not seen the evidence of it in the hallways, but granted, I spend most of my days in a radio station,
sure,
not a hospital.
Yeah. All right, jump in here at 512-836-0590. It's Friday.
No, thank God.
September the 1st, that means we got a host of new laws that go into effect.
Quite a few of them, actually.
How many?
Let's see. I know it's over 700.
The number I heard is 774.
That's it, 770. I was about to say 747, but I knew that didn't sound right.
774 new laws on the books,
wow,
going into effect today. How
almost
about that?
800.
How about that? We got cities that don't have enough cops. We got cities that don't have DAs that prosecute criminals. What could go right with 774 new laws?
In the free state of Texas, nothing says more freedom like more laws.
The Todd and Oz Show, weekday mornings 5 to 10 on News Radio KLBJ.